You're listening to Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here for your Murder Mystery World Tour. We are back discussing the finale of Absolution by Murder by Peter Tremaine, otherwise known as Peter Beresford Ellis.
The explosive finale.
Discussing all the way to the end, chapters 13 onwards, and Herds.
What is it, Flex? What's going on?
I feel like I've read a different book this week.
You mean different to me or different to your expectations? So that's where we're going.
Different to the book that I read the previous 2 weeks.
Interesting. Yes, tell me.
I came in very tunnel visioned, I want to say, to this book. Despite the prodding questions that you asked me to consider the broader political implications, I think I was just so stuck down that rabbit hole of the normal way that historical fiction works with its history.
Sure.
And the normal way that we see puzzles in murder mystery that I kind of missed the forest for the trees, missed the trees for the forest. I'm not exactly sure which way around, but one of those two.
Let me put it this way. Normally on this show, we like to like go back and forth and argue with each other about things, but I think you've hit the nail on the head here.
Yeah.
like, I definitely want to discuss this more in the mystery section, but you were so confident in your ability to deduce the mystery, and you thought you knew what kind of book it was and what characters were going to be important, and it was not at all what you're expecting, which I think is a good thing. It's good to be surprised by a book and the scope that it's trying to take, because this novel, because we're covering set in the literal Dark Ages, the Dark Ages being named so because we don't know what happened then. We know things obviously, but like, it is one of the least detailed like periods in history
in terms of
records, to the point that, and I read this on Wikipedia, so it may not, look, I don't know if this is entirely accurate, but I read a note saying that we don't even know if this happened at Whitby. It might have happened in some place called like Strensol or some, like, the point is the period that we're dealing with is very different from our Indian novels, where we've gone through a period which obviously we're dealing with like lost history and trying to piece together the identity of the Indian people.
Yeah, but it's still like understood over in India. There's still an acceptance of what the truth is, in particular in the issues that came up often in our Indian world tour.
We have both present, as in the time that the story is saying, we have both present and future history to help us guide the actions of the heroes in those stories and to like frame the morals that we judge and the progress that is made in those books and that sort of thing. But with these like Christian 600 AD murder mysteries, we can do whatever we want.
It's not just that we can do whatever we want. I think that Peter Tremaine is definitely trying to teach more about history than any other historical novel I've ever read.
Yes.
You know, the idea that the Indian novels we read had a bit more consensus about them. For example, Vasim Khan's The Dying Day, even though that taught and educated a lot on history in the way that it constructed its mystery and its puzzles, it kind of helped you paint a bit of a canvas of the context of history. it's like abstract art on history. Whereas the academic background of Peter Beresford Ellis as a historian coming through into this text means that almost the majority of it on a reread is that historiography.
Oh, goodness.
It's less that we described with some of the other historical novels we've covered, where they give you like a foothold to go and learn more about the history, and more that they teach you a lot about the history in this book to give you a foothold to put a mystery in.
Yeah. That said, that's not to say that it is all, as I've mentioned, kind of pretty like dates and names and things. Like, there is compelling story in here, and it's partly why I have been prodding you so much on the character of King Oswy, because he is at like the focal point of this entire discussion. And I just finished my reread, you know, before coming on to do this chat here, and I've been reading over the part of the novel that I think I skimmed the most, which is just the debates, right?
Yeah.
Going back and forth about the crown, like the way that you should wear your hair and the days that Easter should be held and that sort of thing. And there is a point at which the Irish like spokesman says, my authority is by St. John. You know, he is the authority that I'm using to state my claim. And then the Roman spokesperson, I want to say Wilfred, because he is like the historic representative there. He counters not by saying, well, my authority is by Peter, who holds the kingdom of the keys to the kingdom of heaven, which is what's like historically known. But the first argument that he puts forward is, well, everybody else is following Rome, so why don't you follow Rome? Which immediately the Irish guy is like, that's a terrible argument. State your authority by God, or this is a garbage argument and you should be like, we should not have been considering what you're saying. But that's the argument that matters, right? Mm-hmm. The argument that by, and this is the wonderful tragedy that Peter has slipped in this like historical essay of a novel, which I love. This entire discussion doesn't need to happen. All these murders and things, all of this politics and backstabbing, the death of Oswy's son when he tries to take the throne.
Like, the decision's made before we even arrive.
That's exactly it. Like the decision of, well, everybody else is doing it, so I should probably also do it. I can see which way the political wind is blowing, is decided by Oswy's wife and Oswy's son before Oswy even gets to like sit at the table and deal with it.
I think that's also one of the reasons that I found this novel so hard to read through the first time coming through it as like the person solving it.
Sure.
Is because so often it felt like all of that sort of dialogue talking about the power balances here was kind of meant to be a distraction. You know, the core of the mystery is so separate from core of the politics of this novel that me going through trying to dig out for sentences that I could come to you and say, ah, Herds, look at this sentence, evidence, which proves my point here. I just kind of ended up, you know, shrugging off all of the interesting details in those debates, and particularly that whole angle of Rome getting more power because it already has power.
The best part of the novel is when Adolf, because all this time, you know, Fidelma is like the progressive smart person who's like gets, you know, detective fiction, basically. she is the detective fiction detective. Yes. But Adolf understands the political situation, and he literally has, there are like two whole pages of him just saying, even though his argument was wrapped in the words of theology, it was a political one. And he explains every little detail of how this decision has come to be made. And again, this is something that we cannot be 100% certain of. This is obviously Peter's position, that though Oswy was, you know, following the teachings of Coleman and the Irish side, he did a flip, that it must have been a political decision. But most sources that I could find online, just with like a kind of a cursory research. With a casual historian's eye, which is even a bit presumptive, honestly. most sources that I find just say, and then Oswy declared that Peter had the keys to the kingdom of heaven, and I would like to also be led into heaven, so we're going to follow Rome. I really enjoy this sort of fiction, this sort of historical fiction. It is kind of a funny thing that you're saying, that the murder mystery is so separate from the political side of thing, because it seems like for a while that they are going to coincide.
Yeah,
I remember you told me like, oh, well, Fidelma is going to change Oswy's mind with a thing that she does, but all she does, and this is Oswy's words, not mine. Now that I know who has done the murders, I can tell the people, and that will take the sting out of my decision.
Yes.
So again, it's a political thing, and like, not to keep talking about Oswy, but like, this is the beauty of his character, that he is so reasonable and so respectful to Fidelma, but at the end of the day, he's a king and he just wants power. Like, yeah, it's great.
Definitely. I mean, that's also something that's so tangible about the way that this novel ends. As we go through the entire case breakdown, we have all of the reveals, classic detective fiction style, and he gets up and he says that, and that's kind of the end.
That's it.
That's where the novel really concludes. We still have like a trailing scene where we get to see Sister Fidelma being invited into her own sequel.
It's at the last minute. Like, yeah.
Nothing really happens.
No. Well, this is the thing. It all happens off screen. because this is perhaps a criticism. You know, I've gone about a lot for this novel, but this is perhaps a criticism that though we obviously set up the culprit Gwyd very effectively, and in some ways a bit too obviously.
Yeah,
she doesn't really get a chance to defend herself after like being accused. Like, you know, she throws a dagger in the like witness scene and like hits, is it Agatho, the crazy church guy, which is great. The guy who claims to have a piece of the true cross. I love how
eccentric question mark in our notes.
He's so sad. He's just like, and he's just crying. It's very sad. But like Gwyd throws a knife and that's it. That's all we see of her. And we haven't seen her in many chapters. When we see her, she's always like, oh, poor Tain has died. But we don't really get more of her side of that like relationship. We don't get her like, let me justify my crimes. She is literally stoned off screen. And Fidelma doesn't, it like also doesn't really get anything for solving the mystery. She gets a pat on the back. You did it. And we're off to Rome now. I don't know. I don't necessarily hate that particular part of it, but like the fact that we don't really get a proper sit down with the criminal.
I think past a certain point, you really have to be committed to the history side of this novel.
I agree.
Get value out of it. And I'd almost be curious to like discuss this novel in the context where realistically this is a piece of academic historiography.
Sure.
You know, if we look back at a lot of the sources of history that we have in forms of like journals and like the one that I studied at least was Tacitus's Annals from Rome. And there's a lot of just, you know, personal anecdotes and opinion that work their way into any document of history.
Sure.
And in some ways, this book isn't really that different. Like obviously Sister Fidelma and all of the actual events that happen are a fiction, but so much of the actual content of the book is just talking about the history in a way that I feel like someone could accurately use this book as a source for another academic piece of history.
Yeah, I really do admire that about Peter's work, that he has decided to get stuck in, because for example, with Oswy's son, I found references to him being the political driver that pushes the synod to occur,
yeah,
which is a little bit different to what's in the book. It says it's his wife in the book.
It's almost...
You go.
It's almost as if Peter Beresford Ellis had a bunch of hot takes about what he thought the history was.
That's exactly
And went to go put them in a book and was like, this isn't going to go down well in the history community. Let's make a novel out of it. And then people can like discuss it in that context. And that kind of like softens the blow of all of the hot takes he's making about generally accepted history.
Are you telling me that the murder machine took the sting out of his words? Is that what we're saying?
Just like it takes, yes.
Out of Oswy, yeah. Oh. Look, I'm just saying Peter Beresford is Oswy from the past. He's time traveled to the future to tell his own story.
Yeah.
He'll tell us how it really happened.
That is such a fascinating parallel that I've only just realized there and is kind of incredible if true.
So I was just saying, like, we don't know that Alfrith was the person, like, we don't know that he was killed by his father, but we do know that he was trouble and he died like shortly afterwards. I believe that's something that we know. So yeah, you're right. Like we're taking all of these sort of floating pieces of information and trying to put them together to form a modern tapestry to tell the story of the Synod of Whitby with a murder mystery kind of twist to it.
The other quick note I wanted to chuck in before we wrap this up and go into the mystery proper is I thought Brother Adolf's conclusion in this novel was like a little flat to me. I don't know if it picks up in any of the later novels.
I hope so.
But he kind of goes with the crime, if that makes sense. Once we've had that scene where Oswy stands up and says, well, that's it. Like we don't really have any scene where Fidelma and Adolf kind of get to talk to each other.
No, it does feel like there are a couple of things from the end of this novel that were cut possibly for time, possibly because Peter wanted to sort of flesh them out further down the line, which I mean, there's, what was it, 50 novels at this point? So I assume they have a budding relationship by now.
They have to.
This isn't
maybe he just got sick of Adolf and was like, nah, screw you. You don't get an ending. I could understand that. I could respect that decision.
Maybe he dies tragically to help her solve her best case yet. And
he
then
dies off screen. He confesses.
He dies. Exactly. He dies to yellow fever off screen. That'd be perfect. But no, you're right. Some of the characters, Gwyd and Adolf in particular, they just kind of go away. And the final scene of the book is between Fidelma and Nameless Courier, who eats a lot of bread, which is fine. But like, it would have been
weird.
It would. It's great. It's a great scene.
I was so distracted by all of his masticating.
Yeah, it's great. I don't remember that line, but I believe
the actual line is he shrugged between the mouthfuls of food he was masticating. But Fidelma still takes the time to point it out to you.
Yeah, she does. Well, you know, she's just thinking to it. She's distracted by his slavishness, obviously. Good grief.
I think in general, I enjoyed this book, but it is obvious more than I think most other novels we've covered where the room for improvement is in this book.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair to say. And I do think you're going to get more out of this novel, again, if you have an interest in history, a strong interest in history, I would say. which thankfully I do. So it's worked out. There you go. Yeah, it's worked out.
Anyhow, we are discussing Absolution by Murder by Peter Tremaine all the way to the end here on Death of the Reader, and we will be back with more of that in just a second. Stick around. You're listening to 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Death of the Reader. Flex and Herds here for your Murder Mystery World Tour. We are discussing Peter Beresford Ellis, his novel Absolution by Murder, written under the pseudonym Peter Tremaine, and its exploration of the Synod of Whitby and all the chaos within. Mm-hmm. Herds, yep. I feel like you have to be relishing this moment.
I feel kind of bad. But yeah.
You know, it's been a few years on this show, and I've definitely lost points before, but I don't think
it's been quite this horrible. I will admit that in past weeks I have felt quite smug whenever you've said, "My goodness, how easy is this mystery?" And I'm sitting over here like, There are so many pillars to this mystery. You've nailed one of them. One of them is also very easy.
Let's just establish this in the context of Death of the Reader canon.
Sure, sure.
I think that if you were to pick this book anytime before we began Quadruple or Nothing, our points, you would have been making a mistake.
Oh, yeah, it would have been fine.
But because you had so many opportunities to fill in other questions about what was going on, you've really capitalized on the structure of the game.
I feel like I've played my hand too well. Because you get to do the same thing to me in the future, which is awful.
Uh-oh.
But yeah, I mean, look, when a character is strangled with brute strength and the, like, one of the major physical descriptions of a female character is like, yeah, they're like really strongly built for a woman. Mm-hmm. And then they have this discussion where it's like, well, a man must have done it. Like, come on. It's obviously Sister Gwyn. I will say that it was well spotted about the poems, because that is not something that I picked up on my first time through. I was not on top of my Sappho.
I think I had a bit of an upper hand from memes on the internet with that one.
Oh, good. I'm glad that that's the thing that you've decided to one up me with during this novel, that you have watched more memes of viewed more memes.
There is, if you're unfamiliar, there is a bit of a trope amongst queer communities where people will discuss like queer erasure through history, and how historians like will be like, oh yeah, this lady lived with her best friend in their home and they never married, and
they were just really good friends, you know? Like,
yeah.
On the island of Lesbo, yes.
As soon as I saw a reference to that, I was like, I see what you're doing here, Peter. I get you. You're in on the joke.
Yeah, yeah, we got there. We got there. But there was, you know, obviously many other mysteries set up in the text. Like, we see Brother Taran meeting up with Sixwolf and Wulfric.
I think that was probably my favorite.
Interesting. I just,
in terms of its execution as a mystery, I don't think it was necessarily my favorite part of the story, but I thought that in terms of applying the trope of your companion at the beginning of a novel secretly being the traitor, it was really obvious in a lot of ways that they were working together, but not super obvious exactly why.
I think there was
a good balance there.
No, and the justification, because he does talk, I think the very first chapter, Taran talks about how his family was killed or his village was burned down by the brother of Oswy, and it's kind of a throwaway line at the time.
Yeah.
Because he's just nerding out. He's like, let me tell you about all the people here and how much I know about
them. Exactly. I mean, they're staring at the corpse of a dude who's being like strung up by Wulfric. So the
focus is
the
on
context
Wulfric.
Of that line is discussed, right? And it's very easy in the opening pages of the book to read it that way and to kind of cement your image of the character in that context.
Yeah, I mean, I will agree with you, because that's the clever thing about this, that situation is kind of depicted in the first chapter, because we mention Alfred and we mention Oswy. We know that they're family, so we kind of expect them to be aligned with each other. Mm-hmm. So, oh, Wulfric is working with Alfred, which means that obviously Taran must hate all of these people.
Yeah.
Which is not the case because of the internal politics of the family, which is what we get into as the book goes on, mm-hmm. which I really actually really enjoy. The other thing that I want to touch on is Athelnoth, which I thought was
poor
pretty
Athelnoth.
Funny. I'm not sure, like, in my mind, I'm not sure how you didn't pick that one. He's so obviously like hiding something. He's like he seems like such a suspicious character to me. Why did you kind of like, what did you think
exactly
his deal
that.
Was, I guess?
He read to me
as a red herring?
Yeah, he read to me as a red herring. Normally, it's so easy to look at a character and be like, oh yeah, they're too suspicious. This is the game. But I was actually stumped by him in this context. I think part of it was because the scenes he was presented with were often like adjacent to that the types of scenes we were discussing at the start of the book, where there was a lot of debate that felt tangential. So I was like, oh, okay, the tangent's continuing here, but it wasn't.
Yeah, obviously Athelnoth, like, he's the big twist with him is as we go on through the book, we get three more deaths. Deus Didit dies, then Athelnoth dies, and then Seus Wolf dies. And just so we all know, in reprintings of this book, the cover of the novel is a monk face down in a wine barrel. And I was about halfway through the book when I'd like seen that cover and I went, why have they got a monk lying face down in a wine barrel? Like, that's not even the murder we're investigating. And we got to Seus Wolf in the wine barrel and I was like, ah, I see. It's a late bloomer.
I didn't have that cover. This is actually the first time I've heard of it now that you're telling me.
I just found it online. Yeah. Like, I was just looking up stuff about the book.
But yeah. I do love the idea that as books go on through the years, the like publishers will pick different things to like be the marketing grab for it. It's one of the great delights, particularly in mystery fiction, because we have so many reprints of classics, Christie in particular, seeing like all of the new different graphic covers that we get. I remember when we did And Then There Were None, I think there were like 14 covers that I was picking between and I hated all of them. And then I finally found one. I was like, oh, this is it. This is perfect.
Yeah, this is the one we're going with. No, I mean, that's just the nature of books, isn't it? I mean, I am looking at it right now. There are so many different ones. There's one with Sister Videlma on the front. There's one with, I think it might be the brooch on the front. I cannot tell. I cannot tell you. But there's all sorts of different covers for this novel, and they're all wonderful.
Although you have just sent me a copy of this cover, and the quote on the front says this novel is fast moving and unput downable. I don't know about fast moving.
And it's credited.
I'll be honest, I don't know about that one, Chief.
It's credited to Irish Democrat. I'm gonna assume it's a publication and not a literal like Irish Democrat, not like just some random Irish Democrat, I assume.
Just some guy they picked off the street and there's like, what? How would you describe the Irish Celts? And he's like, I don't know, fast moving.
Yeah, fast moving, unputdownable. You can't put us down, done. No, I love that. It is interesting though, the way we're talking about Athelnoth being a red herring because Sister Gwyd tries to pin him as the red herring, you know?
Yeah.
She has, in a scene that I would have loved to have had Athelnoth's death be in the second part for the discussion, because having so many deaths at the end feels it's a bit cheap. But like, we literally have the scene where Athelnoth is found hung in his room. And then 2 seconds later, Fidelma's like, this doesn't make any sense. This is a garbage murder mystery.
I know.
There's space to hide under the bed. I wonder if someone might have hid under there and run off when they heard people coming. Yeah,
I did kind of like
and
that.
And it's like solved instantly.
In terms of like putting murders later in the novel, you know, it's a faux pas, according to S.S. Van Dyne, to have more than one murder in your murder mystery.
Yeah.
But I did really love how the further we get into this book, just the less we care about solving them. They're just kind of like, oh, wow, this one was done kind of clumsily.
There's a really beautiful line where Adolf says, oh, I think it's quite obvious he committed suicide. And she's like, well, how do you explain the wounds on the back of his head? He says, oh, well, maybe he banged his head on the wall when he was hanging. And she's like, well, then show me the blood on the wall, idiot.
Yeah.
Like, show me the blood.
it reads like the scene at the end of a Golden Age mystery novel where the author makes fun of you for all of the clues you missed before congratulating you for the ones you got.
Except that we don't have enough time to like go through that process. But yeah, it is very cute, isn't it?
I think the other interesting one was the like bit with the yellow plague.
Oh my goodness. That's such a weird one.
Yeah. It was so strange because it also didn't really wrap up at all. It was another one of those ones that kind of got left a bit hanging where it's like, oh, yep, someone else is dead due to the yellow plague. Moving on. It's like, okay, well, why did, like, I get that the yellow plague is here and people are concerned about it, but like, why was this on the screen? And I never feel like I got an answer for that.
I have to assume, like, it's partly that historical thing of like posing the idea that Deus died to the yellow plague, which I couldn't find anything about. I assume it's true. I trust Peter. He seems like he's got it going on with no independent research of my own. But like, yeah, we know that the yellow plague exists and that he probably died of it, I guess. But it sort of feels like it's supposed to be, again, a red herring for like the murders that occur, but it doesn't,
yeah,
there's no like push, you know, none of the murder victims have like fake symptoms of the yellow plague put on their bodies, which I thought was like the obvious thing to put in there.
Definitely. I think that's one of the really fascinating things about the just general mystery the whole way through in this book is that it has so many opportunities to make things more convoluted for itself.
Yeah.
In terms of like adding extra, you know, conflicting clues to crime scenes. But the way that it actually makes things more convoluted is by just having so many things that don't make sense and don't tie together that it becomes a bit of a mess. It's like staring through fog.
I feel like we've used that metaphor before. But yeah, no, I agree. I think it's a fun mess, of course, but
yeah,
it is. There's a lot of deaths and there's a lot of things happening that don't entirely tie together. And the things that do tie together sometimes are a little bit too straightforward almost. It's bizarre.
Read the most recent one when it comes out, because I want to see the improvement here, because as a debut book in a series, this is great fun, and as we've said a few times, the room for improvement is so obvious.
Yeah.
So either we've been chugging along at this bizarre, kind of imperfect pace, or there has got to be something really special, like hidden away in the middle of this series that just hasn't quite caught the public eye, at least here in Australia.
Yeah, I was going to say the fun part of tackling a series this large is that what's going to happen is we're going to read the most recent novel and find out what the difference is, what the improvement is.
Yeah.
And then we're going to have to figure out, like, was it the first book that like really sparked the imagination of the masses? Was there a specific book in the middle somewhere that really changed Peter's, like, you know, writing career? That's going to be the fun discussion when we get to that. But there is.
Yeah, we got time to read all of them. We got room for that on the calendar.
I don't know that we do, but I will read as many of them as I think I can get away with. Now, there was one other mystery that I kind of charged you with solving, and that was, we've kind of talked about King Oswy's mindset a bit in the previous section. I don't know if you had anything else to kind of add to that on the mystery side. Did you feel like you had enough clues in retrospect to like figure out that it was a political decision and like his mindset? How do you feel?
It was very hard to say. I feel like I could see it as I went back, which is normally the way that I gauge mystery clues, but I also don't feel like the story structured itself around making that a question you would ask unless you already had context.
Yeah, makes sense.
The clues are definitely there, but there's no motivation for them to be clues for anything unless you're already a little bit aware of the political struggles. I'm sure there is someone out there who probably got it on their first read, who's listening like, oh, Felix, you're an idiot.
I mean,
maybe I am. Maybe that's why I have to read these books four times over to even get a crack at the mystery.
Yeah, I mean, look, that's why I put it forward in part one. I was like, have this in the back of your mind, because I do think that when I got to that part of the book, Awakened, this is fun.
Yeah.
When I got to that part of the book where Erdolf spills the beans and Oswy like shows his true colors, I went, oh my goodness, this is my favorite thing in the entire novel. I love this. I love the tragedy of this, like, not even needing to happen, and that this was all about politics. It's a beautiful twisty twist. Like, it's not, I don't even know if it's fair to call it a twist. Like, it's not like, like everything's coming together in my brain.
You said it earlier this episode. It is the tragedy.
Yeah, it's the underlying tragedy.
It's the best way to put it, in my humble opinion. So good work, Hertz.
Yeah, it's like how they stone the yellow plague victim without investigating literally anything. It's the same sort of thing. It's just inherent with the system. That's the problem. It's the problem.
Tell you what, Herds, we should wrap this bit of the discussion.
Also, you're getting 2 points.
Did we not do that?
I don't know if I actually said that. I want to make sure. You're getting 2 out of 4 points. Anyway, let's wrap things up. What's our next week
on the show? I am challenging you.
Uh-oh.
To solve.
To a dance.
The brand new, freshly released Solari Gentle's Woman in the Library.
Woman in the Library.
You might remember Solari Gentle as the official sponsor of the first place award each review season.
Mm.
And the winner, in fact, of the 2021 first place with Crossing the Lines. And her next
esteemed victim,
metafictional monstrosity, drops at the start of June. And we are going to be reading it for its debut. Herds, we're going to be covering chapters 1 to 11 to kick us off. I'm very excited to get into this. I don't even have my hands on the book yet.
Glad that that's how time works.
This is Death of the Reader, your murder mystery world tour. We have been discussing Absolution by Murder by Peter Tremaine, the first book in the Sister Fidelma mystery series. We'll be back with Solari Gensel's Woman in the Library next week. See you then. You're on 2SER 107.3.